It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
Welcome to the Be the People Show. Today, we're discussing Jews and the Democratic Party with a Jewish insider. She spent her life grappling with puzzling questions that she has observed over her life about Democrats. And one of the issues is, what explains the Democratic Party's growing tolerance for overt anti-Semitism among its members, its elected officials? Given the Democratic Party's widespread Jewish support, why have its leaders not worked harder to protect Jewish people from anti-Semitism in America and abroad? And why the blatant hostility against Israel and the embrace of the Palestinians, regardless of the conflict, we can predict how Democrats will respond? Joining me today to share her unique perspective is Ilana Friedman, a Jewish American who's lived and worked in Israel. Ilana is a blogger, she's an analyst, she's a principal at Strategic Intelligence Security. She's an expert on counterterrorism and also the host of a show on America Out Loud. So, Ilana, welcome to the Be the People show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, Ilana, so I grew up black and you grew up Jewish and we were both Democrats. So tell me from your perspective what you have observed. And how long were you in the Democratic Party? I'm assuming that you're not there now.
No, I'm not there now. I was a Democrat most of my early adult life. And then I went to Israel, and I was there for 16 years. And when I came back, what I observed was that the Democrat Party is not the same party that I thought it was when I was growing up. My family were all Democrats, except for my grandfather, who was a Republican and took a lot of heat because of it. But my parents were Democrats, and I was brought up to believe that the Democrats were the good guys. I have since learned otherwise, but at the time, that was the way I was brought up. So being a Democrat in my early adulthood seemed like a natural thing to be. When I came back, what I found was that what I thought was true, that the Democrats were the party that gave the little guy a hand up. And what I found out when I got back was that they weren't giving anybody a hand up. They were giving a lot of handouts. That's not the same thing, because rather than helping the little guy, the American who's striving to better himself, they were actually, putting impediments in the way of people who wanted to do better by giving them handouts that encouraged them not to work, not to find better jobs, not to improve themselves through education and so forth. And in fact, one of these little handouts was for young women that encouraged them to get pregnant and have babies rather than to go out and create a career. And because they paid them for every baby that they had, and they gave them support, and they gave them food. This is crazy. This is the opposite of giving anybody a hand up and helping them to stand on their own feet. So that upset me a lot.
When you say you left and you came back, can you give us a time frame of when you were in Israel and when you returned?
I went to Israel in 1976. And I was a young mother. I brought my two kids with me. I had been recently widowed. And so the three of us went to Israel. And I was there until 1995. I had a break in the middle where I came back for a few years and then I went back. But I was there a total of 16 years and came back in 1995 and began to take a real hard look at what was going on here because I had been away from it for a long time.
Well, that's very helpful. And part of my story is I was in the Democratic Party for most of my life, and I did not leave until 2009. So I stuck around a lot longer than you did. And I agree that the party has made a lot of mistakes. How do you respond to people who say, you know, that it's heartless to criticize the entitlement programs that the Democrats have for people that would rather not work or maybe they're unable to work?
Well, there's a difference between people who are not able to work and people who don't want to work, or people who feel that it's better for them if they don't work because they are able to get all these entitlements. I think that the people who cannot work maybe should get help, and I know maybe about it. They should get help, and you know, in the beginning of the 20th century, there was a very large immigration from Europe, and the new communities in the United States used to support those who could not support themselves. From community efforts, everybody would, in the Jewish community, for example, which is the one I'm familiar with, we had what we called circles. And the circles would be made up of families in a neighborhood or in a region, and they would all contribute every month a few pennies or a dollar or whatever it was. Of course, the dollar was of a different value from now. A dollar actually had some value back then. So they would put a dollar or $2 in every month, and then when someone got sick, they turned to the circle. Or when someone died and needed to be buried, they turned to the circle, and the circle helped them get through the hard period by providing some funding for it. So this was us doing for ourselves, for our community. And we've lost that. Americans have lost that over the years. We expect the government to do everything for us now. And I think that that's a false choice. I think that expecting the government to provide handouts for us so that we don't have to work is a very, very bad system.
Well, Alana, I guess you have studied cultural Marxism and you know where the idea of socialism comes from, and that a lot of what we see in America has the roots of Marxism and socialism.
It does, and this is what we're hearing from members of Congress now, which is terrifying, because socialism is the opposite of everything that we've done in America to make America great and to bring financial stability to Americans who had nothing in the countries that they came from, and so they came here to make their lives better, and they were able to do it because of the free market and because of the functioning capitalism that exists in America. If we go to the only thing that happens when a country turns to socialism, as we can see in Venezuela, is that everything deteriorates and falls apart. Venezuela was the richest country in South America 15 years ago.
Yes, I know.
And it is now one of the poorest. And there is an 80% poverty rate in Venezuela now. How does that happen in such a short period of time? It happened because they turned to socialism and threw capitalism out the window, and people no longer were able to make a living.
And, you know, if people look at American cities, how many of them have gone bankrupt or they're headed in that direction, a lot of those cities, you know, they're trying to give to everyone a standard of living that doesn't come from the effort of the individuals. And as a consequence, they become high tax areas and cities and states, and you find the people moving to places like Tennessee where we don't have an income tax, but we are confronting rising taxes because the people who fled from other parts of the country want to turn our state into what they left behind, or so it seems.
Isn't that interesting? I know when I lived in Massachusetts after I came back from Israel, And one of the things that I noticed was that people were moving to Massachusetts, to Western Massachusetts, which is much more rural than Eastern Massachusetts, and they found places near farms, and they love the pastoral quality of life. But they started complaining when the farmers got up at the crack of dawn and started running their tractors because it interfered with their lives. So they started to pass local laws that would prohibit the farmers from doing their work early in the morning before it gets too hot. This is people moving to areas that seem to be better than what they have, but then they want to turn those same areas into what they had before. This is crazy.
Well, I can tell you that I live in Nashville, and it's called Music City, USA. We have lots of people that have moved downtown where the bars and the restaurants are, and they're complaining about the music. They want the music to stop at a certain hour, yet they voluntarily chose where they were going to live.
That's insane. I mean, they knew when they got there that was how it was there. It's like going into New Orleans and saying, you know, we can't have these funeral marches anymore because they're too noisy. That's crazy. This is what makes New Orleans beautiful. That's what makes Nashville beautiful, is the music.
You're right.
And to take that away or to curtail that because you come from somewhere else where you don't have it, that's nuts.
Well, we're going to take a break, and when we return, we will get to a topic about American Jews and the Democratic Party.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm back with my guest, Ilana Friedman. And we've been talking about just about everything, but now we're going to return back to the subject that started this interview. We're going to talk about American Jews and the anti-Semitism. And Ilana, as a Jewish American, what are you seeing and how are you feeling about America?
Well, I love America, and I'm a real patriot, and I will fight for America tooth and nail. I just think this is the best place in the world to be. But I'm very disturbed by what's happening and what's happening in Congress, what's happening on the streets. I think we are becoming out of control in terms of how we view our freedoms and how many people out there on the streets in the cities want to have their right to freedom of speech but want to curtail ours. That is, to me, is not freedom of speech. That's dictatorship.
Well, what has happened is that the Constitution's First Amendment has been redefined by the political left and on many colleges and universities in such a way that it no longer means, you know, free speech, freedom to disagree. It seems to me only speech that a certain group of people in power consider acceptable. And so they've qualified freedom of speech in such a way that it really strips people who hold divergent views from their rights and privileges as Americans.
I agree completely, and I this is one of the things that I find so disturbing.
What do you think can be done to restore our First Amendment rights? I mean, is it enough for us to just complain about it? Or do we need to do more, or do you see it as something that the courts have to decide once and for all?
Well, it's a tough call because this is a place we've never been before, and democracy is really on trial here. This is We have to decide which direction we're going to go. I think the best way to deal with this is going to be at the ballot box. When we go to the 2020 elections, are we going to vote Democrat, who are the ones who are promoting this skewed freedom of speech, which doesn't give all of us freedom, just some of us? And are we going to vote for people who are ready to scrap the Constitution and go to a socialist society where the government decides all the things that affect our lives? Or are we going to support the road that the president has been taking and give him the support he needs to do his job? That means by voting in strong Republicans, and I would say conservative Republicans, into Congress and into the Senate, and vote out the people who are trying to destroy this country by supporting a socialist anti-constitution program. I think this is probably the best way to do it, and if I can make a forecast, I would say that every indicator that I see points to the fact that Donald Trump is going to win the next election by a landslide.
Well, my last show discussed that with a political commentator, and we talked about, you know, some of the things that he's confronting right now. But going back to the restrictions on free speech, I'm dismayed because too often Republicans, conservatives, Christians, they seem to go along with what the political left is doing. And from the perspective of the political left, it makes a lot of sense for them to throw out their epithets and to shout down other people, because we tend too often to just fold up and just walk away and give them what they want.
Yeah, that's why I say we have to vote in strong Republicans, conservatives, who are willing to stand up to this. I don't think that's who we have in Congress for the most part. But, you know, when I look at the Jewish community supporting the Democrats, it's a wonder to me. I don't understand it at all. If you go back in history, it was the Democrats who were the leaders of the Ku Klux Klan, who were the agitators against integration, who were all of the things that were negative. If you look back at Martin Luther King Jr., he wasn't a Democrat, he was a Republican, and he was a member of the NRA. There was a reason for that, and the Democrats have forgotten that.
They haven't forgotten it. They know who they are, but they have been very clever in repackaging themselves in such a way that they have convinced a lot of Republicans as well as Democrats that they have always been the party of civil rights. And I have to confess that for a long time in my life, I believed that false narrative that's deceived so many people.
You know, I think part of the problem is that the two presidents who were involved in changing the civil rights laws were John F. Kennedy, a Democrat, and Lyndon B. Johnson, a Democrat.
Yes.
And I think that was an accident of history rather than a marker of any kind that would indicate that the Democrats were anything but anti-civil rights.
It wasn't so much an accident of history as a strategic positioning. Like with Lyndon Johnson, he saw the handwriting on the wall, and he knew that if he wanted to, you know, remain in power, that strategically you couldn't keep blacks from voting forever. And so he made that decision, and his party has benefited from it. And so if you actually look at the history of the Civil Rights Acts, the Southern Democrats were fighting it every step of the way, and the Republicans were always out front. They were consistent supporting civil rights. And then the Democrats, you know, the Democrats flipped the narrative on the American people, and not enough Republicans have stood up to fight back with the truth.
Yes. Yeah, that's a very big problem, because the Republicans that we have in Congress, for the most part, there are some very notable exceptions, but for the most part, they are weak, they are unable or unwilling to face a confrontation on issues that really matter. And so they just sit back and do nothing rather than, you know, mount a real fight against these constitutional issues.
Here's what I think takes place is because the Republicans have been so ashamed on the issue of race and they believe that false narrative, the Democrats put forth people of color, and these people, you know, like Omar in Congress, that they are able to get away with things that no one else would be able to get away with. You know, Maxine Waters, if she were white, she would have been ousted from Congress.
A long time ago.
Yes, but if you're a person of color and you're liberal, now I'm qualifying that by saying if you're liberal, you're able to get away with just about anything without Republicans standing up and demanding accountability. You see it at the state and local level as well as the federal level. There's a double standard. It's the only standard that Democrats have.
Yeah, I actually talked about this on one of my shows a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about the double standard that applies to Democrats and is opposite from what applies to Republicans. And I think you gave two very good examples. Maxine Waters, she was urging people to confront Republicans and members of the administration in restaurants, in stores, wherever you see them, and tell them they're not welcome here. Excuse me? She should have been booted out of Congress at that point for saying those things, but she wasn't. And then you had Omar, who came out with some blatantly anti-Semitic remarks and hammered a witness, a Jewish witness, who was brought in to testify to her committee, and she was deeply offensive. He actually said no to a question she asked him, and she says, well, I'll take that as a yes. Really? This was just horribly offensive. So you have her anti-Semitism, and Congress did nothing. They came up with a watered-down bill that came out against just about everything, and no specific reference to anti-Semitism, and then didn't address the problem. The real problem, the underlying problem, is that Ilhan Omar is a Muslim, and she was attacking Jews. This is classic, and yet she got away scot-free. And I don't think that that is acceptable on any level.
Well, I mean, she got away scot-free, and the Congress itself turned it all into a discussion about white nationalism and white supremacy. And I published a book in 2002 about white nationalism. And one of the things I have argued repeatedly, the media doesn't seem to be interested, is that a lot of what they label as white nationalism and white supremacy is just conservatism, that they're using those labels in a way that is meaningless. They're not talking about neo-Nazis and Klansmen and people that are involved in hate groups. They're sweeping conservatives into that same box and labeling them white supremacists if they are conservative.
Yeah, I think this is to some extent at least the work of the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is one of the nation's leading hate groups, but which masquerades as an organization that uncovers hate groups and labels everybody they don't like, everybody who doesn't agree with them, as a hate monger. And this is something which has really caught fire around the country. SPLC was, until very, very recently, a highly respected group in certain circles and had clients like Amazon and Google and so forth who came to them for advice as to how they could, which organizations they could accept money from for their charities. It is so convoluted and so, it's the reverse of the way it should be, opposite of what's good.
I don't know if you remember, but during the Obama administration, the Southern Poverty Law Center, they were actually advising the FBI in its counterterrorism efforts. And what came out of that was a labeling of veterans, pro-life people, Christians. I mean, the focus was taken off of terrorists, and you're an expert on counterterrorism. The focus was taken off the threats to life and limb, and it was placed on people that were conservative.
Absolutely. And so some of the people, for example, who are fighting so hard to keep America safe, like the Center for Security Policy, and people like I'm going to run into trouble here, but anyway, like the Center for Security Policy, whose only frame of reference is how do we keep America safe from Islamic terrorism? And whether you like it or not, the 90% of the terrorist acts in this country and in the world are caused by Muslims. This isn't rocket science. All you have to do is look at the numbers.
Well,
and Ilhan Omar said that was somebody doing something on 9/11. Really?
Well, it seems that the American people, we have our work cut out for us. When it comes to the Jewish community, do you see any movement away from just being Democrats? Are they more likely, if they stay, to hold the Democrats accountable for allowing anti-Semitism to flourish, not just in Congress, but also on the campuses of colleges and universities?
Well, it's kind of a complex problem because, to answer your question first, I do see some movement away from the anti-Semitism of the Democrats, and I believe that there was a significant movement of Jewish Democrats away from the party because of that, not just because of what she said, but because it was considered to be acceptable, and she wasn't chastised for it, and she wasn't censured for it. So I think there is some reaction to that. But you also, Jews have been supporting Democrats because of this false narrative that you talked about. And they believe it. They believe this false narrative. And so because the Jews have themselves been underdogs for thousands of years throughout history, you go back to the Crusades, you go back further, you go back to the Romans, where Jews were enslaved and sent all over the world. You can go back even further, go back to the Babylonians, where Jews were enslaved and taken away from their homes in what is now Israel. And you see that for this reason, and then, of course, you have the Holocaust, which is
yes.
which is unmentionable, but nevertheless, 6 million Jews were slaughtered. And so you have all this history, and so Jews tend to favor the underdog. But they have been snookered, if you will, into believing the false narrative that the Democrats have put up, and the Democrats have covered up their real history and painted themselves as champions of civil rights for everybody. And
right.
So what we have now is a Jewish community that is really vested in this belief.
Well, I mean,
and they consider the Palestinians, for example, as the underdog, which they are not. They're terrorists.
Well, I can tell you, as someone who's taught on university campuses for the past 28 years, my Jewish colleagues were among the most leftists. Every now and then there would be a conservative, and many of them were secular. It had nothing to do with religion. The positions that conservative secularists took, they were strong advocates for the Constitution, and they were few and far between, but they made a huge difference on campus because they just stood up for principles, the Constitution, free speech, and we need more people like that. Otherwise, we lose our nation.
Yeah, I agree, and I think we are at risk of losing our nation unless we do exactly as you say and stand up for what's right and for the constitutional values that have made this country truly great and a leader in the world. We have to go back to that. We cannot let ourselves succumb to this socialist nonsense that anybody who knows history knows what the consequences of turning your country into a socialist country are going to be. We see it in Venezuela. It happened in, 15, 20 years. It was a total turnaround and the total destruction of an economy and of a country and of a people.
Well,
so we need to recognize what Santayana said, that if we do not study history and we do not learn from it, we will definitely be destined to repeat it.
Thank you, Alana, for being on the Be the People show. And is there any information you'd like to share with our listeners about how they can learn more about you and your causes?
Yeah, I have written several books about Islamic terrorism. You can find it by Googling my name. I've written two books about Hamas and one about ISIS and one about another group that most people never heard of, but it's called Gateway to Jihad. And we are, I'm also on America Out Loud. I have written a number of articles there. And by the way, the books can be found in the America Out Loud store. You can also reach me directly by through my email, which is Ilana, I-L-A-N-A, at Ilana.org.
Thank you so much, Ilana. And for our listeners out there, remember, we the people must be the people who stand up and fight for our nation. And when it comes to anti-Semitism and the treatment of the Jewish people in America or abroad, it's up to us to hold Congress and other elected officials to high standards and to the Constitution. Until next time.